At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back. Or if new here, hi, welcome, I'm Georgia. On my platforms here on the internet, I tend to focus on unsolved true crime, trying to spread the word about missing people, cold cases, unidentified people. And today I want to cover quite an old case from here in the UK, a case which I do truly believe could finally be closed if enough eyes and ears are on it. This is still a live case. According to the MoyaAnderson.org website, there have been several breakthroughs in this case even recently. Publicity has produced more witnesses and credible evidence, and Moira's sisters, Janet and Marjorie, hope that with the hard work of Police Scotland's cold case team, we will see a final resolution to this case. The ultimate goal is to find Moira's body so she can finally be put to rest. But before we get into the episode, I do just want to say that I'm intending to donate a large portion of the profits of this video towards the Moira Anderson Foundation, which I'll talk about in more depth later in the video. If it's convenient for you and if the ads aren't too long, please consider watching them all the way through and not skipping them. I might even include a couple more in this video than I usually would do. This is just a really easy way for you as a viewer to make a difference and for me as a creator to make a difference as well. I really want to be able to donate as much as I can to such a wonderful cause in memoriam of Moira Anderson. So again, if it's not inconvenient for you, please just consider watching the ads or a couple of the ads all the way through. That really does make a massive difference. So in case you haven't guessed already, this is going to be the story of a wonderful 11-year-old girl called Moira Anderson from Coatbridge, North Lanarkshire in Scotland, just to the east of Glasgow. Moira is described by those who knew her as a bright, bubbly girl who was very close to the family, and she was incredibly loved both by her immediate and extended relatives. She was one of three girls, the middle daughter to older sister Janet and younger sister Marjorie, with their dad Andrew being a local Coatbridge man, whilst their mum Maisie was originally from Fife. Moira was said to be a very pretty, slight girl with fair hair and fair skin and blue eyes, and she was somewhat of a tomboy for the time. Her sister said that she was just fun all the time, and she loved to buy magic tricks and try them out on her friends and family. It was just constant with the magic. Janet has said to BBC that Moira did also have a serious side though. She wanted to grow up to be a missionary and to go to Africa, wanting to give herself to God. In just a few short months, she was going to be starting high school, and she was very excited for that, just ready to start that next chapter of her life, working towards adulthood. And despite what rumours said at the time that Moira went missing, she was not a troubled child in any way. She was not a handful who had run off to London. She had no motive, no reason to want to run away. She was so loved and so happy. Her disappearance was due to something much more nefarious than that. Moira disappeared just 6 weeks before her 12th birthday, on Saturday the 23rd of February 1957. The weather that day was terrible. It was dark and wet and snowy, and around the time she disappeared, there was a severe snowstorm happening. Moira, who'd been at her grandmother's house for that afternoon, had been sent out by her Uncle Jim to the Laird Street Co-op, which was just yards away from her grandmother's house. You see, her grandmother, who lived nearby, was extremely ill and the uncle needed to cook for her, but they were out of lard. He asked Moira to pop down to the shop, probably not having a second thought about the weather because, as I said, the shop was simply just yards away. Now the shop, this co-op, usually shut late afternoon, but he thought that Moira would make it in time, so he sort of like rushed her out the door. And then she disappeared, never seen again by any member of her family. The staff at the store would later tell police that they hadn't closed earlier that day, but just a number of years ago, that was confirmed to have been untrue by Police Scotland. The likelihood is that Moira turned up at the store and she found it closed. She never bought the lard as she intended to do, so I suppose maybe in her head, she had no reason to head back and let her uncle know. Instead, she headed straight to the bus stop, being seen by multiple people who knew her waiting at this bus stop. Coatbridge was a small place and Moira actually had a job at this time delivering milk bottles to all her neighbours, so she was a very familiar face around the area. And this was also a time in which people did just generally know their neighbours. There have been at least two confirmed sightings of Moira waiting at the bus stop. One neighbour remembered seeing her at the bus stop searching her pockets as if she was looking for money. Whilst no one really knows why Moira got on the bus that afternoon, multiple sources have speculated that she got on the bus to head to a different store instead to get what she needed, because she also planned to get her mum a birthday card.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
The bus route was headed to Kirkwood, which is just another residential area outside Glasgow. It wasn't exactly going anywhere exciting, and there were probably other shops on this route. It's thought that she boarded the bus around 3:50 p.m, but Moira did actually have plans that evening to go with her cousins to the Regal's 5 p.m. film showing, which from a quick Google search I think was on Ellis Street, which was just an 11-minute walk away from Laird Street where Moira currently was. From what I can gather, it does look like this bus route would have passed Ellis Street, so maybe in failing to get what she needed from the shop, she just decided to head straight to the cinema early? Maybe? Maybe in the blizzard and the deep snow she didn't fancy the walk? That could make sense, but we don't actually know what her intentions were in getting the bus that day. It is all just speculation. If she was planning to go straight to the cinema, why wouldn't she go back and just let her uncle know? I hear you say, if that is indeed what she was doing. Well, maybe it's just that she was 11 years old, her critical thinking skills wouldn't have entirely developed yet. She was probably much more independent than 11-year-olds would be now. It's easy to look at this as an adult and think what you'd do now, but we all make decisions as a teenager or a preteen that we probably wouldn't make now. Moira probably just didn't think anything of it. She couldn't go to the shop, so she was just going to go straight to the cinema, or she was just going to get on the bus to go to a different shop. The bus Moira got on that day was a Baxter Company bus and was one of just few on the road at this time due to the weather. And this was a bus route that Moira would have been very familiar with. It was one that actually drove past her house and her grandmother's house multiple times a day. It's thought, like I said, that she boarded the bus around 3:50 p.m. And then she just disappeared. Someone, a woman who vaguely knew Moira, recalled seeing her on the bus that afternoon. Moira was sat at the front of the bus and she just walked past her, but the witness didn't pay too much attention as to where Moira got off because she got off at the rear exit herself and didn't have to walk past Moira at the front again, if that makes sense. But this witness was the last person to report seeing Moira alive. Around midnight that night, Moira's family raised the alarm about her going missing. At first, they assumed that she had gone to the cinema as planned with her cousins, but then she never came home, and that was very, very unlike her. So they called the police and a loose investigation started. Despite the insistence of Moira's parents that something bad must have happened to her, Moira's case wasn't actually upgraded to a murder inquiry until 2012, 55 years after her disappearance. Up until that point, she was simply considered to be a missing person or potentially a runaway. Police were very convinced in the early days of the investigation that Moira was a runaway, and this theory wasn't held by people reporting sightings of her from across Scotland in the coming weeks and months. Glasgow, Edinburgh, even sightings down in England. I saw one report of sightings in London. But nothing was ever confirmed and Moira never came home. All in all, nothing much really happened in this case and this investigation for many, many years. I don't have loads to tell you here. Her family just fought against the police who weren't all that interested and they were doing the bare minimum to actually search for her. It was just her family desperately trying to get the word out there and being ignored. It actually seems to have been a particularly poor investigation because in 1992, a woman called Sandra Brown approached the authorities after she'd had a very concerning conversation with her father, where he confessed to her about the Moira Anderson thing. Now, Sandra Brown was the daughter of a man called Alexander Gartshaw, and he was the man who was driving the bus that Moira boarded that afternoon, a man who wasn't even ever so much as questioned in relation to Moira's disappearance. You'd think that would be one of the first stops in the investigation, wouldn't you? Investigators would want to find out if the bus driver remembered where Moira got off, if she was with anyone. But nope, it's just inexplicable. They never spoke to him. And that fact is even more shocking when you take just a very brief look into Gartshaw's history. On January 23rd, just 1 month before Moira's disappearance, Gartshaw had been arrested for the rape of his family's babysitter, whose age in sources seems to vary between 12 and 17, but I do think it was closer to the lower end of that spectrum. He was released on bail and Baxter's bus company decided to allow him to have his job back, at least until his trial. In the April, he was convicted of the crime and was sentenced to 18 months in prison. But despite this, Gartshaw wasn't brought in by the police for questioning until after his daughter Sandra came forward in 1992. He was questioned in Leeds, England, where he'd moved with his second family on suspicion of Moira's murder and also relating to other charges of sexual abuse concerning Sandra's cousins, his nieces. And then the charges against him were inexplicably just dropped. The procurator fiscal responsible for the investigation of these crimes showed a complete disinterest in bringing Gartshaw back to Scotland for questioning. That was it. That was literally the end of it. Sandra didn't know any of this about her father as a child. When her father was in prison, she was told that he was spending time in a mental health hospital because he was ill, and she eventually lost all contact with him when he moved to Leeds with another family. As an adult, Sandra ended up moving to the Scottish Highlands, where one day she would run into an old friend from Coatbridge, and they had a conversation about her father. Only then did Sandra realise that she had been lied to her entire life, and suddenly a lot of details about her childhood made a lot more sense. There had always been this strange air around her father, she said. Him doing inappropriate things, saying inappropriate things, making young girls, children, uncomfortable. With hindsight, everything kind of clicked into place. For some reason, her female friends, even as children, always ended up distancing themselves, not wanting to be around her or her family, and now she finally knew why. And then her father confesses to her about the Moira Anderson thing. The timeline with Moira and her father was too much of a coincidence. Sandra had no doubt that her father had to be involved. Moira was on his bus. Sandra would go on to spend many, many years advocating for Moira, she's still doing it now, absolutely certain that her father was the one responsible. He was clearly a sexual predator and be found guilty of being such just 2 months after Moira disappeared. And again, it was his bus that she was on the day she disappeared. It was just too much of a coincidence. So in 1998, Sandra releases a book titled Where There Is Evil, all about her father, claiming that he'd been part of an organised paedophilia ring and he was the only explanation as per Moira's disappearance. Proceeds from her book actually helped her set up the Moira Anderson Foundation in the year 2000, which was a very small slither of light come out of such a dark situation. The foundation is still going today, it's dedicated to supporting children and adults affected by childhood sexual abuse, and to this day it does really wonderful things in Moira's name, helping people in whatever way they can. As I said at the beginning of this video, a portion of the proceeds of this will be going towards this foundation, so please make sure you're watching all those ads all the way through, as long as it's not one of those weird half an hour ads that occasionally comes up. I'll let you off for that one. But anyway, Gartshaw was let loose by the police in the early 90s, and then that was it in the investigation once again for nearly two decades more. In 2006, Alexander Gartshaw died, taking any knowledge he did have about this crime to the grave. If this was him, and believe me, we are going to be talking about him a lot more in this episode, we'll never get true justice for Moira, as he is now dead. But the evidence against Gartshaw didn't just begin and end with his daughter's word. One of his friends, James Gallagly, who was also convicted of child sex offences and died in prison in 1999, told an inmate that himself, Gartshaw and another man had abused Moira at the bus depot after subduing her with chloroform. According to an article in The Scotsman, before his death, Gallagly wrote a 15-page confession claiming that Moira's death was not deliberate, but they didn't know what to do with the body after she had died, and then he detailed where the body had been buried. Now, he died, like I said, in 1999, so we can assume that this written confession was written before 1999. However, a dig wasn't held in the area where he said Moira had been buried until 2005, and even then, nothing was found. So that first dig was unfruitful, but there had also long been rumours that Moira's body may have actually been hidden in a cemetery near her home, a cemetery called Old Monkland. A man called Sinclair Upton, believed to be an acquaintance of Gartshaw, had actually died about a month or 3 weeks after Moira's disappearance, and was thought that whilst his grave was open and before the coffin was placed inside, Gartshaw or his accomplices may have placed Moira's body in there. Radar searches of the plot did indeed find an anomaly suggesting that there was actually an extra set of remains in this grave. By this point, time was moving on, it was around 2009. Surviving relatives of Moira instructed lawyers to begin the process to formally seek permission for an investigation of this site, for which an exhumation order would need to be granted. Finally, in January 2013, after lots of bureaucracy, the authorities began exhuming the grave. The search of this grave plot took two whole days, and the operation was led by Professor Sue Black from the Forensic Anthropology Department at Dundee University. But eventually, Chief Inspector Kenny McLeod from Strathclyde Police confirmed that Moira's remains were not found in the grave. Despite the disappointing outcome, though, he did say this case would be remaining open. What was it the radar had picked up, I hear you say? Well, apparently it was just a lot of bricks and slabs about 7 feet down. Finally, after so many years, it was now the early 2010s, and it seems like the authorities were finally willing to take Moira's case seriously. But we still don't have any more details on what Gallagly's confession actually contained. It seems that the confession was just put into a secret file, and despite several Freedom of Information requests since then, the details have never been disclosed, so there's still this shadiness surrounding it all for sure. Excuse me if you can hear my cat screaming, purring into the microphone. She's very loud, but she demands attention.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
6 months or so before the grave exhumation, Moira's case had finally been upgraded to a murder investigation after the Strathclyde Police Serious Crime Review Team had been set up in June 2011. Moira's family fought to have her case reopened, and in July 2012, Lord Advocate Frank Mulholland instructed the team to look into her case to make it a priority. Janet, Moira's sister, who is now 68 years old and living in Sydney, said, "I am shell-shocked that after 55 years, Moira's case is now being treated seriously as a murder inquiry instead of just a missing person. I am praying that this is the last hurdle before we get some kind of closure and finally find out what happened to Moira. Nothing will ever bring her back, but this latest development is hugely encouraging." So, following Moira's case finally being upgraded and the exhumation of the grave in early 2013, her name finally had some publicity, 55 years after the fact, which meant that, of course, finally, some people started to come forward with tips. An article in the Scottish Mail dated September 2015 details new reported sightings of a bus on an isolated farm track on the night Moira vanished, a bus just partially blocking this road. The bus was seen by a local farmer and his son, who said that all the lights on the bus were off, but there was a strange condensation on the window. It was certainly an odd enough sight that the next day the farmer called the police to report it, but by that time the bus was long gone. The sighting then just wasn't investigated any further. So this bus was seen in an area of farmland close to a country lane in Mavis Bank near Airdrie, and although the area now is much more built up, it seems, it was only a couple of miles from where Moira disappeared. Why did police not investigate this further? You've got a girl missing who was last seen getting on a bus, then an eerily parked bus on a quiet country road just 2 miles away, and you don't do anything? And then to top it all off, the farmer was insistent that this bus was a Baxter company bus, the same company bus that Moira got on. As of the article in 2015, the farmer has since died, but a family member of his has contacted the new inquiry team to let them know about this story. The farmer was always sure that what he'd seen that day was significant, but he just couldn't get anyone official to listen to him. So on the back of this, the inquiry team have theorised that Gartshaw may have taken Moira's body on the bus to this spot to dispose of it, and so this area became the newest focus in the inquiry. In the months before this tip came in, a team of soil analysis experts from Aberdeen University had actually been looking at a very different area, a place called Dick's Pond at Carnborough, which is just southeast of Coatbridge. They began focusing in on this area after Sandra said that her father used to take her there to this pond quite regularly, and he once told her it was the ideal place to dump a body. The article reads, "A witness claimed to have seen a man pulling a small girl into a field close to this pond. The girl was dressed like Moira and the man was wearing uniform similar to that of a Baxter's bus driver." I couldn't find any further information about the search of the area around Mavis Bank near where the bus was seen, but I do assume this search happened and nothing was found. According to a February 2022 article, a Professor Lorna Dawson, who is a forensic soil scientist, has also assisted with searches in mining areas, canals, countryside areas. Obviously, as I'm here today talking about this case, no sign of Moira's body has ever been found. In just February of last year, so 2022, police drafted in water drones, and what headline said was a final bid to find Moira. Apparently they're now looking for just tiny things like bone fragments, buttons, jewellery, shoe buckles, anything that could give them a lead. The drones would carry radar and sonar equipment over the areas where Moira may have been dumped, but once again, this was over a year ago now, and it doesn't look like anything came of these drone searches, sadly. Other leads have come in recent years include a woman who heard a scream on the day Moira disappeared, a woman who has been assessed to be a credible witness. She said she was walking back to a remote farmhouse on the outskirts of Coatbridge when she heard a blood-curdling scream. She also spotted a set of footprints in the deep snow and couldn't understand why anyone else would be alone out on this lonely farm track late at night in the snow. She personally was walking back to her family friend's farmhouse, but there was nothing else in the area for somebody to be out there for, nor even any other homes. This woman, who at the time was in her late teens but now lives in France, says that she still suffers with nightmares about this incident, about the scream. She actually first contacted Sandra Brown about it about 20 years ago after the release of her book, and then 15 years later gave her statement to the police. She did speak to the family friends about it at the time on the night she heard the scream, but she felt they dismissed her, made her feel silly, so she didn't report it to the police at the time. Moira's sister Janet has also made a public appeal for the conductor of the bus that day, who was a teenage girl herself, to come forward and speak to the police. The conductor is not named, but she'll be well into her 80s now, and apparently she lives in northeast Scotland. Apparently she's been approached twice by detectives but just will not open up to them, and she's even refused to confirm if she was the conductor on the bus in question. There could be multiple reasons why she refuses to speak out, but being a teenage girl herself at the time, I find myself wondering if perhaps she might have fallen victim to Garch herself and is simply ashamed or just doesn't wish to relive the trauma. Maybe she's blocked out. My main question here is, how did Moira end up alone with Garshaw on the bus that day? There is no known reason as to why she would have had to have remained on this bus until the very end of this line. There's no reason why she had wanted to go all the way to Kirkwood, as far as anyone is aware. At what point did the conductor finish her shift and get off the bus, just leaving Garshaw and Moira alone? Were there just fewer people on the bus because of the bad weather conditions? Did paedophile Garshaw just luck out, finding himself on a bus alone with a preteen girl? Garshaw always claimed that Moira got off the bus before the end of the line, but how do we know that's true? We do know that Garshaw was a paedophile. He confessed to molesting his niece. There was the rape of a babysitter. Police have interviewed him over sex offences involving 122 different children. There's rumours that he was a known flasher in local parks around Coatbridge. Sandra has even claimed that on one occasion she'd seen her father giving Moira sweets in one of those parks. Maybe that could explain why Moira stayed with him on the bus alone. Maybe he chatted with her, made her a promise that he didn't intend to keep. Sounds that could be a logical explanation in the absence of literally anything else. It even seems like in the weeks after Moira's disappearance, her older sister Janet also almost became a victim of Garshaw's perversion as well. She was out of school during her lunch break when a man called her over to his car, which seemed to be broken down. She said he had the bonnet up and asked her to hold the dipstick whilst he did some other work. Only when she did so, he groped her under her skirt. Janet said that she immediately dropped the dipstick and she just ran, turning back to note the registration plate as she did so. It seems that Janet ran back to school, who reported what happened to the police, and two policewomen came over to speak to her, but then nothing much was done. She never heard anything more after that point. No criminal charges were made against anyone. Afterwards, the school rector spoke to the pupils and told them to walk around in pairs at all times. They were not to leave the school alone. Janet said to BBC, "That was Alexander Garshaw. I identified him. I remembered him so clearly. Luckily, I was in an area I could get away. It was broad daylight. Unfortunately, Moira was trapped on his bus." In 2014, it was actually announced by prosecutors, rather unprecedented, that were Alexander Garshaw still alive, he would have been indicted for the murder of Moira Anderson. But authorities have also been very careful to say that an indictment is not a guilty verdict. What they need now is to find Moira's remains, find both closure for her family who have searched so hard for many years, and closure for the investigation. Her body might provide the final answers they need. Although it's very unlikely they'll ever get any sort of legal justice now, regardless whether it was Garshaw or someone else, with it being 65 years on, just answers finding her body will help them put everything to rest. Janet said in 2015, "My sister would have been 70 this year and her whole life was taken from her. I will always be angry at how the police investigated this case in 1957. If they'd done their job properly, then we might have found Moira and had a court trial to give us some closure. But we have confidence in the police team now, and we are grateful to the Lord Advocate for doing all he can to give us peace. We won't give up on finding her. This case, as of April 2023, does remain a live investigation, despite what the headlines might make you think. They have not given up on searching for Moira just yet.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, Baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
They're still working on drone technology, radar, and sonar tech. That could all help them in the search. You never know, one day it might be strong enough, it might show something. They're still appealing to the public for any information that could help them with the investigation. All the leads that come in are assessed and investigated thoroughly. Something that probably should have happened back in 1957, but beggars can't be choosers. Anything you've got even now is super, super helpful. You might think it's too late, but if leads can come in 2014, 2015 that are still being considered really, really helpful, then 2023 is no different. Please, if you live in the Coatbridge area, if you live in Glasgow, then make sure you share this story. Not necessarily sharing the video, although that would be great, but just share Moira's story, talk about her, talk to your relatives, family, friends who might have been alive in this time, who might know something. Thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for choosing to spend this time with me and with Moira, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.